and thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight. I'm Brandis Friedman. Here's what we're looking at. Hundreds of new state laws are taking effect in the new year. How they could impact you. And it was a time of deep division. No, we are not talking about our current political climate, but about the American Revolution. We revisit our conversation with filmmaker Ken Burns on his latest series. First off tonight, just a couple days away from the big countdown to a new year, and city officials say Chicago is ready. But after the deadly shooting that marred the city's Christmas tree lighting last month, top cop Larry Snelling has this message for parents.
Have an idea of where your kids are, because the kids that go down there to act this out, they're doing something that they saw on social media, and they're going into downtown for that particular purpose. And we want to make sure that if your kid is going somewhere, check, double check, and triple check, and make sure that that's where they're going to be.
The city says police officers will be enforcing a 10 p.m. curfew for everyone 17 years old and under. And starting at 10 p.m., free train and bus rides run until 4 a.m. Festivities will take place along the Chicago River Walk at Wacker Drive from Wells Street to Lake Street, with a main stage at Wacker and Franklin. And for more on performances and start times, please visit our website. Chicago neighborhoods that used to have ShotSpotters saw a steep drop in homicides even after the controversial gunshot detection system was removed. At the request of WTTW News, the UChicago Justice Project analyzed crime data in those 12 South and West Side neighborhoods that had ShotSpotter and found homicides decreased by about 32% between January 1st and September 22nd. September 22nd marked one full year since Mayor Brandon Johnson scrapped the ShotSpotter technology, despite attempts from some older people to keep the system in place. The city's budget, that takes effect Thursday, does set aside funding for some other software maintenance and licensing. For more on that, check out our website. And the weather event known as the bomb cyclone barreled across the Midwest, bringing blizzard conditions, roller coaster temperatures, and even a tornado. Forecasters say a bomb cyclone is a system that rapidly strengthens as surface pressure drops. The sharp cold front left parts of central U.S. as much as 50 degrees colder than yesterday. Meanwhile, an EF1 tornado damaged buildings and snapped power poles in central Illinois yesterday. Forecasters say we'll get a break from the high wind, but not the cold, this week. Up next, what you should know about how some of the new state laws taking effect January 1st. That's right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Pope Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
The new year is approaching quickly, and with it comes a whole slate of new state laws. Hundreds of new Illinois laws are set to take effect January 1st, covering everything from AI regulation to background checks for police. Here to walk us through some of the biggest additions and how they could impact you are Brendan Moore, a state government and politics reporter at Capital News Illinois, and via Zoom, Ben Zielinski, also a reporter for Capital News Illinois. Welcome. Thanks to both of you for joining us.
Great to be here, Brandis.
So, Brendan, one of the new laws, it allows Illinois residents to sue federal immigration agents if they are arrested near courthouses or if they believe that their constitutional rights have been violated. Tell us, you know, the Trump administration, we know, is challenging this new law in court. What can you tell us about this suit and what it could mean?
Yeah, Brandon, this was expected. So the law was a response to Operation Midway Blitz, which resulted in the arrest of 4,500 folks up here in Chicago area, and resulted in a lot of clashes between federal agents and folks in the community. So lawmakers enacted this legislation that allows for a right of private action, as well as provides a safe zone around courthouses, state courthouses. We knew that the federal government was gonna file a lawsuit, basically saying that states cannot do tell federal agents where they can and cannot go, what they can and cannot do, that they can't regulate their actions. So it's a supremacy clause case. We will see where things go. But another of many legal actions between the state and the Trump administration.
Right. Of course, we'll have to wait and see if a court overturns that law and if it makes its way all the way to the Supreme Court, as many cases have when it comes to the Trump administration. Ben Zelensky, another new law was created in response to the police murder of Sonya Massey last year. Tell us the story behind this new law and what it does.
Yeah, this was a super high-profile incident that happened in Springfield, where Sonya Massey, a black woman, was shot and killed by a white Sangamon County Sheriff's deputy. Really, what we have found through Capital News Illinois investigations, as well as other legal cases that have come out in front of the jury in Sean Grayson's murder trial earlier this year, was that Sean Grayson had a very troubled history. He was the deputy who shot Sonya Massey, and he had a lot of history of disciplinary issues and not following orders at other police agencies that hired him before he became employed in Sangamon County in Springfield. So, you know, what the state lawmakers are really looking at here is trying to find a way to kind of fix that issue. How do these disciplinary issues get overlooked? And what this new law does is it basically requires police departments to take a look at a candidate's entire background, go through disciplinary records at prior agencies, and see if any candidates have an issue before they are hired onto a police department. So things like what happened with Sean Grayson at other police agencies don't fall through the cracks.
Another law, Brendan, is the Family Neonatal Intensive Care Leave Act. It expands family leave to a larger swath of employees. How does that work? Tell us about that one.
Yeah, so this would basically require that employers of 16 to 50 workers would have to provide up to 10 days of unpaid leave for employees that have a child in the NICU. For larger employers, it'd be up to 20 days. So the FMLA covers larger employers as well as public employees. So this would cover some smaller employers and would cover part-time workers as well. So it would basically say, it basically says that the your employer can't has to maintain your health insurance and has to reinstate you once your leave is concluded. And they also can't force you to use your paid time off in lieu of this unpaid time off.
In order to take that time off with a baby in the NICU. Also, AI, of course, a hot button issue in 2025. That's not going to stop in the year 2026. Tell us about one of the new laws that focuses on regulating AI in Illinois.
Yeah, so this law basically prohibits the use of AI in employment decisions if they could discriminate against a protected class, you know, race, sex, gender. It also, there's a provision in this law that would prohibit discrimination based on zip code. Basically, I mean, protected classes already are protected from discrimination, but this just kind of clarifies that AI is included in that, although it, we should be clear that this is kind of a gray area because the Trump administration a few weeks ago enacted an executive order that is trying to rein in state-level regulations. The Congress has also indicated they may enact a law that preempts state-level AI regulations. So this one and other ones that Illinois has enacted in recent years may be in limbo depending on what the federal government
right,
does.
And to that point, you mentioned President Trump signing an executive order earlier this year focusing on deregulating AI. It reads, quote, United States AI companies must be free to innovate without cumbersome regulation, but excessive state regulation thwarts this imperative. Don't know if the Illinois law, if that's going to count as excessive, if this is the kind of thing that we'll see in court. Another law, Ben, it changes the way Illinoisans can store guns. Tell us about that.
Yeah, this was a very controversial law, but also a big priority for Democrats in Springfield. And really kind of what it does is it creates some new penalties that really are designed to incentivize people to make sure their guns are locked up and completely stored away from any children. This really takes place when children are present. Gun owners must be keeping their firearms in a locked container. It's going to have some sort of key code combination, more than likely, that is completely inaccessible to a child or really anybody else who's not able to own a gun. So if a gun owner is somehow found in violation of this, they are subject to some pretty high fines, up to $10,000. But, you know, know, one of the things that kind of is grandfathered in here is being able to report guns that are missing. People who have their guns still missing under this new law still have 48 hours to report them as missing before they face any penalties. But a lot of new firearm regulations here as part of this law that are really designed to keep guns out of the hands of children.
Another law, we don't really have time to get into it, but I do want to mention that Illinois is ending that 1% statewide grocery tax. You all have reported, Brendan, that 656 municipalities, which covers about 56% of the state's population, they've enacted their own local grocery taxes. Setting that aside, in just a few seconds, what else are you keeping an eye on in Springfield in the new year?
In one word, the budget. We've seen a lot of cuts coming from the federal government and economic growth slowing in some ways. That's going to have an impact on state coffers. So a challenging budget every year, but it's especially going to be this year.
Especially this year. Ben, just a few seconds. Same question to you.
Yeah, same thing. But also we'll be keeping an eye on the Bears just to see if state lawmakers, this pitch from the Bears that they're going to move to Indiana is something that sways any opinions in Springfield.
The Gary Bears, and not just the Bears game this weekend against the Lions. Brendan Moore and Ben Zielinski, thanks to you both for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Brandis.
Thank you, Brandis.
And for more new laws set to take effect January 1st, check out our website. Up next, a new series explores America's struggle for freedom. We revisit our conversation with filmmaker Ken Burns. The American Revolution, a new film from Ken Burns, Sarah Botstein, and David Schmidt, tells the extraordinary story of the birth of the United States. But if you think you're familiar with that story, think again. More than 9 years in the making, this six-part, 12-hour documentary series tells the tale of the country's founding struggle from viewpoints you haven't seen before. It begins with a reminder that the United States we now know was not the first nation here.
Long before 13 British colonies made themselves into the United States, the six nations of the Iroquois Confederacy, Seneca, Cayuga, Onondaga, Tuscarora, Oneida, and Mohawk, had created a union of their own that they called the Haudenosaunee, a democracy that had flourished for centuries.
Joining us now with more about this monumental project are filmmakers Ken Burns and Sarah Botstein. Welcome to Chicago Tonight. Glad to have you both here.
It's great to be back. Thank
Congrats
you.
Congrats on this massive project is not quite the word
it's
to cover
it. It's been a long, long time.
I'm sure it has. So as we just heard, you begin with a different confederation of states. Not so much the colonies that we know become the United States, but specifically Native American nations that long predated the American Revolution. How important was it to begin with that context, Ken Burns?
Well, I think, you know, what we're taught in grammar school is that the American Revolution is about taxes and representation. And that's true, but it's also about Native American land. And I thought it was interesting as we learn more and more about it that Benjamin Franklin had himself been inspired by the Haudenosaunee, this Iroquois Confederacy, and their model that had worked for a long time as a model for the United States. And he convened seven of the 13 colonies in Albany, drew a picture of a snake cut into pieces under the dire warning, join or die, and then we just realize maybe that shouldn't be in the body of the film, but maybe at the very beginning, so that we could realize that what the revolution is a world war, a civil war, and a war essentially over the prize of North America. And what is the prize? This land. And that land is already occupied by 13 British colonies, superimposed over the land of British, of Native nations, and to the west are many more Native nations that are extraordinarily complicated groups, each individual, and as different from one another as, say, France is from Belgium. And we wanted to make sure that was understood, that at the heart, that this is about moving into this new space that and is, claiming it for our own.
It is about so much more than many of us really remember. And many people don't fully appreciate, once you get into the war part, right, just how savage that conflict is. Here's a clip discussing the aftermath of the Battle of Bunker Hill in June of 1775.
It's four of the most awful hours of combat in American military history. There are 1,000 British casualties that day. There are 220-some British dead.
40% of the attacking force was killed or injured. 40%. That's a horrendously high casualty rate. It is the highest casualty rate for the British Army until the first day of the Somme in 1916. It is unbelievably bloody.
Sarah Botstein, we hear from one expert who says part of the Revolutionary War or part of the revolutionary history has been sanitized. Mm-hmm. What are we misunderstanding or forgetting about the Revolution?
Well, I think, you know, we forget that the American Revolution is at least two things happening at the same time. One is this huge revolution of ideas and how a government might be structured and who might lead that government and who might be responsible in selecting who rules that government. And the other is a terribly brutal, very complicated, as Ken was just saying, 18th century war. And 18th century war is really terrible and awful and bloody and scary and violent and dark. And in order to really understand our founding story, I think you really have to braid the two together. You have to understand the revolution for this war of ideas and ideals, and then the war that was fought for those ideals and principles to have a run.
Ken, in other conversations, you've talked about democracy being sort of an unintended consequence of the revolution. What do you mean by that?
So the idea is, first of all, there's a quarrel between Englishmen that gets broken out into natural rights. It's the Enlightenment. So they're thinking of arguments about why Britain is wrong, and all of a sudden they're no longer saying, well, you said this and we deserve this, but human beings themselves, by being human beings, deserve that. Natural rights. So Jefferson is going to say all men are created equal while he owns other human beings. The cat is out of the bag. Now human beings are going to have to be equal, even though it takes 89 years to happen in the United States. That's over. So things are beginning to change and morph in the world, and the American Revolution is leading that change of how these ideas are moving. So the assumption of democracy is that these people are going to come together and create a republic. They mean of an elite, almost like the example that kind of we inherit from Greece and to a lesser extent Rome. But the people are going to fight and die and win this war are so-called ordinary people, and they're going to deserve something. So you can say that democracy is not an object of the American Revolution. It's a consequence of it. And there's a big difference of that, and we are all the beneficiaries of that big difference.
So obviously lots of voices, reenactments, footage over 9 years of work. We hear a number of very familiar celebrity voices. How do you think this series is different from any other documentary you've done?
Well, you know, first of all, and it goes back to what Sarah and you were talking about with the violence. You know, if you've got the photographs, if you've got the newsreels, the violence is proven. But if you've got a painting and somebody's got a bayonet and maybe there's even a little trickle of blood,
it doesn't feel, they
seem different for us. They are very much like us. So I think this is a story about how you tell the real story of the revolution and you get under the surface of it and forget the distance and time. And a lot of it is doing reenactments. A lot of it is asking the finest actors in the world to read off camera. And I think we have a better cast than any film that's ever been made or television series ever that helped bring alive not just the familiar top-down folks, and you get to know Washington a little bit better with more dimension, but dozens, scores of other people that you've never heard of. Sometimes they're teenagers. Sometimes they're Native American. Sometimes they're free or enslaved black people here, or women who are half the population and are central to the success of the revolution and to keeping the resistance alive, whose stories aren't told, but also all the other players in this global struggle. The French, the Dutch, the Spanish, the English, all of their soldiers, all of their kings, all of their ministers. And so what you do is by having all of these different voices, you give a sense that this is what really took place. And instead of putting your thumb on one side or the other, you're an umpire calling balls and strikes. Then everybody's got their play. Everybody understands their role in it, and you can make it the complex, I think, most interesting story we've ever tried to tell.
Mm-hmm. So we've got another clip, this one about the belief of those who are fighting for their independence. Here's that.
I think to believe in America, rooted in the American Revolution, is to believe in possibility. That, to me, is the extraordinary thing about the patriot side of the fight. I think everybody on every side, including people who were denied even the ownership of themselves, had the sense of possibility worth fighting for.
So, Sarah, when watching the film, there are times that you would expect the British to prevail in a particular battle. And that's kind of what, you know, we all learned in fifth grade as well, you know, a very well-trained and organized army. And, you know, you expect them to win the battle and then the war. But, of course, that's not always what happens. And it's, we know that history has written what actually has happened. What does that say about, you know, the Americans who called themselves patriots at the time? Were they misunderstood?
I don't think the patriots were misunderstood as much as I think we don't understand how absolutely unlikely it was that we were going to win, how surprising it was that we were going to win, that we were able to throw off the biggest, most mighty military power in the world with the greatest navy in the world, and we actually wouldn't have done that without the French. But I think the patriots were very successful as they moved from 1775 to 1781 down the eastern seaboard in rallying support, inspiring people. I think the words of our declaration were meaningful. I think the war, nobody knew how it was going to turn out while it was being fought. So we look back on it with a lot of ideas, and I think we overlay the revolution even more than our other wars and our other moments in history with, as Ken often says, a kind of sentimentality, and where it's a distance because of the paintings, because of it's 250 years ago, and the people who we know come down to us in these paintings with wigs, and, you know, they were young revolutionaries making it up as they went. They didn't know how it was going to turn out. The people on the ground didn't know how it was going to turn out, and it is really unlikely that we were able to do what we did.
Tell me, Sarah, a little bit about the importance of the Native American nations, yeah, as well as black people, African Americans, mm-hmm, be they free or enslaved, for both sides of this war.
So I think, you know, you can't tell a story of America without widening the lens to see who is actually living here and who was fighting the war and who, if the whatever way the war went, was going to be impacted by it. And so in any film we make, we want to widen the lens and have people think about who's on the ground in the house next door to you, who lives down the street. And the Native American populations were vast and different, and there were hundreds of them, and they were not a monolith, just like no population is a monolith. And the free black people were all different, and the enslaved black, and people made all kinds of very reasonable and rational decisions that, again, we look back and judge and moralize about, when in fact it was very reasonable to side with the British, it was very reasonable to be a patriot, and it was very reasonable to say, what does this have to do with me, and get out of the way, as we see even today.
Speaking of today, because we are living through a tumultuous time, of course, which there's this, you know, bitter political division in the country right now. Ken, as you were working on this film, was there any period, you know, of that deep division that you felt still resonates today?
Well, I think, first of all, the one we're covering, the American Revolution, is deep division. We began this when Barack Obama had 13 months to go in his presidency. So we've been watching the rhymes of history, the echoes of history change as we've done it. But here's the central thing. When a person is in a struggle, having great difficulty, they go to a professional, and the professional wants to ask an essential question. Where are you from? Tell me your story. Tell me about your parents. How did you get to where you are right now? Because that's the way we're going to unravel what's going on right now, the difficulty you're having. So if you go back in a time of great division and internal turmoil for an entire country, you go back to your origin story and find out where you begin, you might be able to find the pieces in which it's you're less thrown out by how much division is. There's always been division. But you might find the path back to how you solve that. So we're hoping that if anything this story does is help put the us back in the U.S. and permit us a chance to celebrate the glories of what we invented. This is the most important event in world history since the birth of Christ. It changed the way people were. Everybody was a subject up until then, and all of a sudden there were people who were citizens, and the great responsibility that entails, that's about as inspiring inspiring a story as I know, and maybe it helps us get back to a place where there's less of that hand-wringing, less of the sky is falling, less of the sense of, oh, it's so bad right now. It's been really bad. It was bad in the Revolution, a civil war. It was bad during our civil war. It's been bad at lots of different places that we've covered in the work that we've done together. And so I think there's a fundamental optimism. When you study the past, there's also a fundamental sort of psychological therapy that takes place. If we learn our origin story, we can help us get through this and begin to move on to the next great phase, which is repair.
All right, around the corner. it has been a pleasure and an honor to speak with you both, Ken Burns and Sarah Botstein. Thank you so much for joining us. Congrats on the documentary series.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
And we're back right after this. And that's our show for this Monday night. Sign up for our free email newsletter, The Daily Chicagoan, at WTTW.com/newsletter. And join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 10. Some residents are pushing for voters to decide whether local leaders should pull the plug on a massive quantum computing development on the city's south side. Now, for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, wishing all a happy and healthy holiday season.